Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, a cross-generational, cross-cultural conversation about leadership and about putting our individual power to work during our short time on this amazing planet. I'm Ann Doyle, author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders, and your host. Today, we're going to be talking about women in law enforcement. Getting women to go into this very, very important field is still a challenge. It was really back in the early 1970s when women were first being recruited into this very important field, but a very traditional male occupation. And at that point, there were only 1.4% of all the officers in the United States were women. And now here we are more than 40 years down the road. And that number has grown, but really not enough. It's only up to 13% nationally now. And there's a new book that just came out a couple of months ago. It's called Thriving in an All-Boys Club, Female Police and Their Fight for Equality. And it really focuses on the careers of women who have been trailblazers in this traditionally male occupation. And I have two of those trailblazers with me today in the studio. But the book also reports on how many of these women feel that they still feel a bit like outsiders in police culture. So that's part of the challenge that we're going to talk about. And because there's tons of research now about the fact that women bring very, very important skills to this work. So I'm thrilled to have my guests, three different generations of women in police work, and three leaders here. I'm going to begin with Chief Doreen Olko. Hello, Chief. Hello, Doreen.
Hi.
Doreen is my generation of pioneering interloper baby boomers. Graduated from Michigan State University in 1974 and joined the Ingham County Sheriff's Department in 1973. So, and you became, at that point, the department's first woman patrol officer at a time that was very unusual and very controversial. And over the next 17 years as a patrol officer, earning your master's degree and continuing your training, eventually became the deputy chief of police in the city of Auburn Hills in 1996, and the following year, chief of police, one of the very, very few. And when she recently retired, and I was at her retirement party, I learned she was one of the longest serving women police chiefs in the country. So congratulations and welcome, Doreen.
Thank you.
And also, I have another pioneer who made history, Lashinda Stair, who is the first assistant deputy chief of police for the first assistant chief.
Yes, ma'am.
For the city of Detroit.
Yes.
And welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Also, 23-year veteran.
Almost 23.
The Detroit Police Department, joined in 1996. And steady leadership progress all the way up. I saw that during your tenure, moving up through the ranks, including as a sergeant, becoming the commanding officer of the Equal Employment Opportunity Office, where you were responsible for investigating all complaints about harassment and discrimination. So we can talk a lot about that. But making history in March 2014, is that right?
Yes.
When you became the first member of the Detroit Police Department, first woman and African-American?
Yes, ma'am.
To be appointed to the rank of first assistant chief of police.
Yes.
Yeah. And also holds a master's of science and a bachelor's degree. And most recently named by Forbes magazine, one of the 2017 40 over 40 women to watch in the country.
Yeah, great honor.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And Aisha Hutchins.
Yes.
Our next generation, 27 years old, born and bred, resident of the city of Detroit, earned your communication and earned your degree from Communication and Media Arts High School in Detroit, and also a bachelor's in criminal justice from the University of Michigan. And yes. Really, I guess you're the daughter of a police officer. Is
yes,
that right?
I am.
Yeah, so we definitely talk about dads here. But 2015, is that right, when you joined the Detroit Police?
Yes.
Yeah. And now a member of the DPD field recruiting team, too. Is that recruiting other officers to come into the department?
Yes, and those who are interested, those citizens who are interested in becoming police officers.
Okay, great. So we want to talk about all of that. So lots to talk about. Let's get going here. And, you know, I want to begin, let's begin with you, Doreen, because... you know, let's start with what attracted you to this field in the first place. And it was incredibly unusual back there when you started.
Well, it was very unusual. And I was a student at Michigan State trying to decide what I wanted to do with my life. And you have to remember, this was the early 70s, late 60s. And it had been a tremendous period of social change in this country. So I decided that I wanted to be part of that change. And there were opportunities for women to enter policing as a result of a presidential commission. And, of course, the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which created a scenario in which women could not be barred from policing because of height and weight requirements. Those were no longer applicable. So I decided, to the horror of my family, there are no police in my family. They were horrified. This was an inappropriate career for a young woman. My family was horrified by it. And they consoled themselves with, well, maybe she'll mature out of it.
So you obviously haven't matured.
I did not. So it was an interesting... It was interesting to me because I was very, very interested in whether or not, or to what degree policing could impact the welfare of communities and people in general. So that's why I decided I wanted to do it. And I finally found somebody, a sheriff's department in my local community, that would hire me. We had a major debate over, it was months long, over whether he was going to send me to the police academy, and ultimately he decided he would. Then we had an agreement that I could go to patrol. He tried to talk me out of that. But then finally he said that I could stay in patrol, in a patrol car, answering calls for service, like a regular police officer, if I would agree that I would quit if it didn't work out, was the phrase used. But nobody defined what it working
before
out
it even
would
started,
be.
Right?
Right.
You will quit if this doesn't. I won't have to fire you. You're just going to say, this isn't for me.
And, of course, there was, you know, there were petitions from, you know, the other workers, other deputies. The department was 153 people at that time. And there were, you know, there were the people, the confrontations with the, I'll never work with you, I'm not going to back you up, you're a danger to everybody. And we went round and round about that sort of thing for a couple of years. After I came out onto patrol, I had a really good training officer who decided he was going to give me a chance. And he did. He trained me the best he could. So it was very controversial. And ultimately, at that department, it proved to be so difficult that I went to yet another department where there were a couple of other women. There were like three other women. So I went there because I wanted to go to a place where I wouldn't be the one and only, because it just ultimately was too difficult.
Yeah.
So yeah, that worked out a lot better.
It's hard to come to work every day when you're the one and only and not wanted.
Under siege all the time.
Wow. Well, I want to come back to that, to talk about some of that, because it hasn't all gone away from what I understand from research. Chief Stair, what got you intrigued with this field?
So a few things. One, I had two uncles who were police officers in the city of Detroit, and then a childhood friend that I grew up with. Her parents were both police officers, and she and then her baby sister, after high school, they both opted to joined the police department as well. So I had many police officers around me, and I was at Wayne State at the time. And ultimately, it doesn't sound great, but it's the truth. I needed a job, right? I needed a job. I needed some benefits. And so I applied. And what I didn't realize, because I really felt like this was a way to finish paying for my undergrad degree, and the plan initially was not to stay once I graduated, to move on. But I found rather quickly that it was the right place for me. Mm-hmm. And so now, almost 23 years later, I'm the first assistant chief.
Yeah. What was it that rather quickly you found it was the place for you? Because a very, very different story
right.
from what Chief Olko experienced when she entered the field?
Sure. So when I started, and I was just telling Asia this story, when I graduated from the police academy, that night I was chosen by my class and attack staff to do the code of ethics that we do. As someone from each class is selected to do that. And after I graduated, there were two deputy chiefs. And again, Detroit is a little bit different when you talk about the percentage of women on our department. We had two female chiefs. One was in charge of Patrol East and one was in charge of Patrol West. And they both came up to me wanting to know where I was going after I did the code of ethics, right? And so the landscape was certainly a bit different. And then we had a lot of women who were in command level positions and certainly executive positions. So one, I saw myself in them.
Right,
so that was one. Two, with that, then there came some mentorship and some friendships along the way. And then just the idea of being in a very large organization and being able to find units that I kind of fit in, like what you talked about earlier in your intro, the EEO office, which just made really good sense for me.
Right. Okay. And Asia, how about you? This is fascinating to me in terms of, you know, the difference that we've seen during the decades. And so what was your experience in terms of what got you into it and what you felt from the beginning?
Well, mine is a bit similar to AC Stairs. My father was a retired police officer. He retired before I was born. Some of my cousins were officers as well, and I just found out that people who my father knew are, one is a captain now, and I have a cousin who's a sergeant right now as well. In the academy, I will say that when I got there, I was like a deer in headlights. I didn't know what I got myself into. But as time went on, I just told myself, hey, you're here for a reason. I got my degree. I was like, we just going to push this forward. I got my degree in criminal justice. Just keep going. I mean, if your father put, you know, your father gave you the idea, try it out. Keep going. Afterwards, I became the guide on, which is the person in front that walks the class down. They entrusted me to be the guide on, and then they entrusted me to do the code of ethics. At graduation, I did the code of ethics, and I got such a standing ovation from it, from how I said it, and I was just like, okay, this is great, and it's an honor when you are shaking hands with, you know, with these higher ups, and one of them looks you directly in your eye and says, I was impressed, and that woman is now Chief Hall in Dallas.
Wow.
Yes.
One thing I'd like to say about the Code of Ethics, it's something we all share. Mm-hmm. That Code of Ethics was developed by the International Association of Chiefs of Police in like the 50s or the 60s. And we all share it. I've been at a Detroit graduation and heard how they do it. I've been at other police academy graduations, and it's done in other ways. We used it in my own department on the awards. But it is something we all share. And it is.
See, I don't know anything about that. Yeah. And maybe some of our listeners know nothing about that.
Yeah, it's almost like your Bible. In law enforcement, right? And it's about morals and judgment, being confidential when it's necessary, treating people the way that you want to be treated.
Well, what do we know by now, Chief Volkel? I mean, so we have almost 50 years maybe of experience in terms of women in decent numbers in this field. What do we know so far about what women tend to bring to this work? That might be a little bit different than what most men bring.
Well, I think, you know, both being a police officer and from hiring and training and promoting and, I'm trying to find the word I want, to developing women to become police leaders. I think that one thing that I've learned is that women do bring a little bit different judgment to the table. It's been my observation that the women tend to be more detail-oriented. They often are better policy followers. In other words, you know, departments spend hours and hours, days, weeks, months developing appropriate policy for how you want officers to act in any given situation. And it's been my experience that the women command officers tend to be a little more willing to not vary from that. They're willing to take that more seriously, I think.
The men more winging it?
Men more winging it. The women tend to be more detail-oriented. They're very, in my experience, I mean, you can't say that men are not good investigators because they are, but that's certainly a quality that women often bring as a detail orientation, whether they bring it into patrol or investigations or whatever detail they're on. I think they do that very well. I think they're good at handling more than one role, more than one can deal with. I hesitate to use the word multitasking because I'm not really a believer in multitasking. But I think they're good at doing multiple things at multiple levels, which is a big necessity in policing. I don't know if my colleagues here will agree with me, but I think that's you have to do that. You have a lot of competing priorities, particularly in patrol work in the field. When you're a field commander, you have multiple competing priorities going on all the time.
You know, but another thing that I read about in my research is really communication skills.
Absolutely.
You that's know, a good one. That's a very good one.
And the whole piece about in a situation where you got a dangerous situation and the woman might not be the biggest, toughest, strongest one there, but bring something else to it?
Absolutely. So I think communication is key. I always talk about us in general needing to be a little bit more thoughtful when I talk to my brothers and sisters on the Detroit Police Department, but law enforcement as a whole. But the communication piece is key because women tend to listen, right? And that's the one thing that they don't train you to do in school. You never learn how to listen, but we listen a little bit more instead of being aggressive just for that very second. Mm-hmm. And then so by listening, we listen to try to understand what's happening and not so much listening to just respond, which oftentimes may be the case because you're in a situation where things may be very volatile.
Yeah.
But that communication is key, and listening, I think, is the number one piece. And I tend to think that those softer skills, and a lot of police officers, women in particular, may not necessarily want to be associated with words like softer, but those soft skills that you learn along the way from being mothers, aunts, grandmothers, cousins, right? You take that and you use that in work on a day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And just like the chief was talking about, you know, not necessarily multitasking, but that's what we do. We're mothers, you know. Mm-hmm. I have two high schoolers. One just graduated from high school, going to college. The other one's going to the 10th grade. I have a husband and I have a busy job, and I'm back in school to get another master's degree. So we're constantly managing things. And then in order to do that, as well as, you know, at home and at work, communication is really key.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Chief Okol, that you're a wife, you're a mother, you're a grandmother now, you know, and so it's not as if you had to choose either or. I mean, I hear you saying you can do this,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You can do this. And Asia, you know, in terms of this whole piece about what women bring to this important work, you know, you said something really interesting when you were talking about in the academy. And you said when I first got there, I was like a deer in headlights.
Yes.
And what was it about it that scared you? And what was it about it where you found your strength? And did you have a sense that maybe you as a woman were bringing some strengths here that maybe balance some of the male strengths?
Well, yes. When I said deer in headlights, it was more towards the tech staff. They were big, you know, men with the hats on, and they came in yelling aggressive. I'm like, oh, my, what is going on? Okay. But I played college basketball, and my coach, she was a female, and I have had male coaches. And, yes, I have been yelled at. So the yelling, you know, I was just like, okay, just, you know, you're disciplined. Just stay in line. Do exactly what they tell you, and you'll be just fine. I got peace. Well, the thing is, I'm a person that do read my Bible all the time. So I got peace and by praying. And and that's exactly what I did all the time. I'm like, okay, just help me out here. Aisha, just keep do exactly what they say, and you'll be just fine. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And when they brought responsibilities to me, I would never say no. I would say, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll give it a try. And when I gave it a try, I gave it my best. And that's exactly what I did.
You know, I mean, just listening to the three of you, I mean, you are so impressive, and I mean, what you bring to this is so important, and it's discouraging to me as a citizen to look at the numbers and see how little progress we've made in terms of the number of women in in these jobs, let alone the women in leadership. What's the problem?
So one thing I gotta give DPD a shout out. We have
Detroit Police Department.
Right, because I could be talking about Dallas or Denver.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're talking
about
Detroit, Motown,
the real DPD, right? Detroit clearly is the real DPD. But we have about 25% women on our agency. And that may not sound a lot, but when you talk about 13% is the national average, that's a huge difference. And I've traveled all across the country testing for other agencies to promote to sergeant up to and including deputy chief. And the one thing that was always a guarantee was that I would be selected for the assessment. That's because there are not enough women around, and they had to have some diversity within the panels who were doing the selection. And I've also been in a situation where we had a test, I think back in 2008, a lieutenants and sergeants exam. And one of my now very dear friends, who's an assistant chief down in Jacksonville, she was a sergeant at the time, black female. She came to test our sergeants, and she was sitting on a lieutenant's list to be promoted. So although we're doing well in Detroit, it's still a lot of the same issues that Chief Doreen had issues with, because they fought her to get promoted. They did not want her to be a lieutenant. She finally was promoted, and she became the first African-American female lieutenant that Jacksonville Sheriff's Department ever had. But that was just in 2008.
Wow. And when she came, they were still fighting a woman moving into leadership.
Absolutely. And one of the things that she said when we first met was that she could not believe how many women were on our department. And at the time, we had Chief Ella Bully Cummings, who was our first and only female chief, and she was a great chief as well, but she was a chief at the time, and then there were several lieutenants, inspectors, commanders that were women as well. And so when we go around the country, people are impressed, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Right, and I know, Chief Olkel, that you've worked. I mean, you've cared about this a long time, and you've worked, but I live in Auburn Hills, and I watched you as a chief of police, and still, we have very few in Auburn Hills, too. I mean, what problems did you run into?
Well, not so much. I mean, in Auburn Hills, it was one thing. I was already the chief.
You're right.
And, it takes a long time for women to gain the experience level. And they have to have access to the team training. And that is often the challenge in women preparing for command is... And I ran into this on my way up, is that I never had an opportunity to go to the FBI National Academy because the chief of the department where I was at the time, that it would have been the proper time for me to go when I was a lieutenant or a captain. Mm-hmm. He just said, we're just not invested in you. We're going to send other people, but not you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, I mean, it was there right to your face.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do that differently. You have to be, when women... reach the level where you can train them to go on to the next level through these kind of training opportunities. I found it to be some work to sometimes encourage them to do it. Often I ran into the wall of, well, I just don't want to do it. I don't want to be the boss. I don't want to tell people what to do. Mm-hmm. And that was sometimes a challenge, is the fear of that. Mm-hmm. And my family, I have all these other complications in my life, and I don't want to be gone for this long. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And it was very difficult sometimes to encourage the women to do it. I think a lot of women, as you mentioned, AC Stair, there were a lot of women that came into the job, I think still to this day, for benefits and pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it was a kind of job you could get. Good quality benefits and pay. Now, that's not so true anymore.
Absolutely.
Those days are gone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so fewer people at all want to be police, male or female. So that's a problem in recruitment as well.
Well, Officer Hutchins, I know you're working on that right now,
yes,
right?
Ma'am.
That's part of your job. So how are you recruiting people?
Well, we go out into the community. We go to all different kinds of community events, job fairs. We post our flyers and information on social media, job boards, any way we can. Even if I got to get on a bus and put a flyer on the bus, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. It's to let people know that, yes, we are hiring. And, yes, people ask us all the time, like, how is it? And we tell them, like, it's great. We have ample opportunities to promote. And I think every 2 years now we have promotional exams. So, and we have over 40 something different units. So if you want to be an officer that that likes to draw and do sketches and make flyers and different stuff like that, we have a unit for that. Mm-hmm. And if you're someone who wants to work with children, you can do that as well. If you're a person, if you want to be an officer and you want to work with the police athletic league, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. It's just not about patrol. Yes, we have patrol, but there's other units that you can go to as well.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I think of, you mentioned some really things people don't think about, but, you know, when I think about police work, I mean, there's some pretty tough things that you deal with, pretty tough things. And just from a psychological, emotional point of view, how do you do that?
I think you separate work from home, one. Also recognizing that the good days certainly outweigh the bad days. And mm-hmm. there are some things that will stick with you for the rest of your life. However, again, with the good days outweighing the bad and having a career where you develop friendship and beyond, like, right? So family makes a big difference too, because then we support each other mm-hmm. through some of those difficult times. I wanted to piggyback on what Asia said about, you know, how do you do it? Well, her team, the field recruiting team, goes out, and like she said, they're everywhere, anywhere you can think of, from barbershops to hair salons to churches. But the other thing is them just being out in the community, because we stopped some years ago with having a field group go out so people can see our recruiters. And mm-hmm. the one thing I like to say to young people is that I hope you see yourself in me because I see myself in you. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple police magnet schools too. And in both cases, we have more young ladies in the class than
really?
We have men and or young men. And one of those had to do with the fact that they see me. And
right.
so, yeah. And so then they can see themselves doing something. And then when you tell them some positive things that have occurred in your life just by way of joining the police department, sometimes it astonishes me. Right. So it's incredible when you tell the story, and we've hired over the last couple of years over 800 new police officers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to be said, too, that, you know, the quality of the people that we're hiring into policing now is the name of the game.
Yes.
I mean, there's a, you know, as a result of television and movie, there's a public perception that policing is, you know, action oriented and it's all car chases and, all, you know, there is some of that, but that is not what the job is about. It's a social maintenance kind of job. Our job is to take care of people. That is what we do. And you have to attract the right kind of people. And the ways that you detect and tell who are the right people, because that is the name of the whole game, mm-hmm. is getting the right people to the job. Mm-hmm. Part of it's pay and benefits. Part of it's, you know, testing their psychological ability to do it. Only a certain mm-hmm. number of people can do it. Mm-hmm. Not anybody can do it. It's
right.
not that kind of job.
Right. It's a challenging job, an important mm-hmm. job, but not an easy job.
Nope. That's right.
Yeah, and everybody can't. Nor right. should they even
nor
try.
Nor should they.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because it can be a social meat grinder out there. I mean, it can be. Unlike Detroit, who has lots of different units, departments like the size of Auburn Hills, everybody goes to patrol. And
right.
you can stay there for your whole career. And you see the same things over and over and over again. And it can be very difficult for people. It is very much a grind. So we remind ourselves of our why we became police officers. You have to go back to that. Why did I want to do this job? Mm-hmm. And you have to continue to refresh in your mind why did I want to do this and what's important about it,
you
and
know,
not focus on the bad things, as A.C. Stair said.
Well, and as a citizen out here in the United States of America in 2018, I mean, there's this feeling that we're in an era of not a lot of trust of police officers in this country. And I think with social media, where you have people posting videos of some pretty bad things that have happened, officers shooting people, significant incidents of African-American men in particular, having encounters with police that create a lot of outrage. And so I'm interested in your perception of what do you think the perception is right now in the United States, and what can we do about it?
I have one very strong feeling about that. Social media has exploded some of these things in ways that I think are really negative. National stories, or, you know, as we all know, there have been some things that have come out on social media that really weren't true. And when you look at our local communities, that's not at all what we see in our local communities. That is not what we saw in Auburn Hills. Largely, we got along very well with the community, and that was expressed to us in a lot of different ways. There was a point in time when it was unbelievable the number of people that sent food, and not just businesses, the average person, African-Americans, Latino folks, the whole diversity of our community, they were bringing us cupcakes. I mean, because they wanted us to know that they believed in what we did and that we appreciate. It was amazing to me. So I think the national story is people hate the police, but I'm not so sure in local communities that that's actually true.
It's kind of like everybody hates their member, hates Congress, but they love their member of Congress.
Yeah. I think so.
I think it's twofold. One thing is certainly it has to do with having a relationship with the community prior to the bad thing happening. So that's one. And our Chief Craig, has done an amazing job as it relates to that. At the same time, there has been in the media a lot of things that were put out there. And some may even say that, you know, some of these really bad things that have happened have always happened, but because now we do have social media, we see it. And so then you internalize it. And so as it relates to, you know, I'm a mom of an African-American son. And so I am sure that I've had probably a different conversation with my son for reasons of what we see out in the media because they're in different spaces, and our sons grew up in the same in the same area, but that still doesn't change anything. And so people feel a certain kind of way about things that are going on, and so they pencil in on what they see in the media. And again, some of it's not true. But some of it is,
some
right?
Some of it is,
and people do make bad choices for different reasons. And police officers are humans, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we make mistakes. But the most of the time, the lion's share of the work that police officers do is incredible work to support the citizens in which they're sworn to serve. But it is absolutely an issue out there in the community now. And we always talk about, like I said before, making sure that you have a relationship with your community beforehand. And then that way, when the bad thing happens, the big bad thing happens, it won't be like what's happening in Chicago right now and so many other places around the country.
Right.
I agree. You have to work on that relationship every day, every day, every day, every day.
Asia, do you want to weigh in on this?
Sure. I believe that communication is key and being out there in the community is key. Me personally, we do get citizens that, you know, come up to us, and anytime they see us, they go, "Well, I didn't do it." and you know what I tell them? I say, "Me neither."
Yeah, you see. Yeah.
I didn't do it either. And then they put their hands up, you know, the whole hands up, don't shoot thing. I'm like, listen, I understand what you saw in the media. That's the media. This is reality right here. If I'm approaching you and I'm talking to you in a respectful way, just give me the same. That's it. I'm the type of officer. I'm the officer that I want to be. If I'm not fearful of you, why are you fearful of me? Don't see just my uniform. Look at me.
See me. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
See me.
What about the when you're like out in the community, and then there's a mom or a dad with their young child, and they say, "You better stop it, or I'm gonna tell her to put you in jail."
Oh, yes.
That's the all-time worst.
We have to correct that.
Yes.
We definitely have to nip that in the bud right then and there, because I don't want children to be afraid of us. Because the simple fact is, okay, let's take off this uniform. Are you going to tell your child the exact same thing?
Mm-hmm. It's just a uniform.
It's just a uniform.
It should be respect and not fear, maybe.
Yes.
I will say last week, unfortunately, we were at a police officer who passed away, his funeral, and one of the young ladies in his family was next to me as I was getting in a car, and she said, I want to be like you when I grow up. And it was like, oh my goodness.
Cool.
Right, because my own daughter hasn't even said that, right?
It'll be a while before she does.
Yeah, she's 15, right?
Yeah. Give it 10 years.
Yeah, it's work in progress, right? But yeah, it was so nice to hear, you know, a young lady say something like that, and so inspiring for so many different reasons. Mm-hmm.
You know, we could talk on and on. I wish I had two more hours to talk about this with you, but I want to leave it with just a piece of advice that you would give. Primarily, it's women listening to this podcast. And, you know, what would be your advice to young women thinking about this as a career? Or maybe I think some of the things that you face, they could take those skills into other careers as well. Any advice that you give to young women now? Doreen?
I would say do it. You know, it's a great job. It's a great profession. Where else can you have this great impact on individual lives than in this profession? So I say do it. And I say, you know, don't be afraid to take responsibility for others. Be a leader. Take a promotion. Do it. It's worth doing. It is. Women bring something important to this job. So do it.
Sounds
and
like
don't
you're
be
all,
afraid.
Don't be afraid. You're all passionate about the fact that we need more women in policing.
Absolutely.
Chief?
So I would just say, one, do it because you can and because you can be the best of the best, because so many people like the chief has proven that. And one, it's a place for you. You can make a difference. And I think as you grow into law enforcement, you also learn so much more about yourself. And so what you learn about yourself helps you to be able to manage different things in your life. And there's no other place where, and I think I've told you in a previous conversation, I've met presidents, vice presidents, secretaries of state, you know, was at the U.S. Supreme Court with the Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor, right? So I was able to do that because I made a decision in 1995, hired in 1996, to join the Detroit Police Department. So there's so many incredible opportunities that are out there. And when you talk about the FBI, National Executive Institute, all the other different trainings. And right now, I just finished a master's business certificate program from Wayne State that was paid for by Wayne State and the city of Detroit. So there are incredible things and opportunities that lie ahead if people apply for law enforcement, particularly with Detroit Police Department. But law enforcement across the country certainly needs more women.
Mm-hmm. And Officer Hutchins.
Yes, I say go for it. Put your best foot forward, take that leap of faith, and get out there and do it. It is an amazing feeling. It is awesome. I enjoy the feeling where kids come up to me and they're like, hi, police! Hi, police officer!
Hi, police!
Can you do the lights? It's a great thing. Like if you even if you know you just might be going through something, just the smile on that kid's face will brighten your day. And you never know what can happen. I mean, hey, I'm sitting here doing a radio show with the First Assistant Chief.
Thanks for listening, everyone, to Powering Up with Ann Doyle. I hope you'll subscribe and tell your friends about us. You can hear more about us on my website, www.andoyleleadership.com. We'd love to hear from you. My Twitter is @AnnDoyleLDR. Of course, there's a Facebook page, Powering Up Women. And our thanks to producer Robin Kinney and her fantastic Motor City Woman Studios here in a creative hotspot, the Greater Detroit, Michigan, where she and we are amplifying the voices of women. So women of all generations, remember, find your unique powers and then put them to work. And remember to support your sisters. They are your most important allies, your wolf pack. Now let's all go power up.